How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by Providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar?
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter by 14. They placed him in charge of a trading charter.
And every day while slaves were being slaughtered and carted away across the waves, he struggled and kept his guard up. Inside, he was longing for something to be a part of. The brother was ready to beg, steal, borrow, or barter.
Then a hurricane came and devastation reigned. Our man saw his future drip, dripping down the drain. Put a pencil to his temple, connected it to his brain, and he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his pain.
Well, the word got around, they said this kid is insane, man. Took up a collection just to send him to the mainland. Get your education, don't forget from whence you came, and the world's gonna know your name. What's your name, man?
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton, and there's a million things I haven't done. But just you wait, just you wait.
When he was 10, his father split.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 2nd of July. It is 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We hear from Trax, the Broadway musical Hamilton, and we do this for a couple of reasons. First of all, it is our last show before the 4th of July holiday on This America 250. Also, we do it because the man who wrote the source material for that musical, Ron Chernow, will be our guest today later on in our special We Still Hold These Truths, America at 250. And thirdly, because the music is just so damn cool. So we will do all of that this morning as we look at America 250. We're going to have a conversation this morning with our terrific panel. We'll go over some of the big stories that are making news, and then we're going to spend our 10 o'clock hour talking about patriotism and freedom and government and the future and how Americans feel about America. We'll talk about that as well. And then at 11 o'clock, we'll have the final installment of the special that Bo Breslin and I curated and wrote and put together. And we will have Ron Chernow with us. And we will also talk to Fergus Bordowich about the centennial celebration and look at the difference. Because we've been focusing, I think, a little bit on what it was like to celebrate the bicentennial and compare it to the 250th that we're in now. And there's a big difference. But look at what happened of how they celebrated 100 years later in 1876, right after the Civil War, which is fascinating as well. A celebration that took place in my home city of Philadelphia and in Fairmount Park, which was very cool as well. Fergus is a good friend of this program, had been with us for a long time in the Hudson Valley, so it's wonderful to have him back and talk about his book, Centennial. So all of that this morning, and we look forward for you to hear it and to take part. We'd love for your letters, panel at wamc.org. Public policy and communications expert Teresa Bourgeois joins us this morning. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Good morning. I want to begin first by praising you and Bo for this incredible series. It's not only enlightening, it's fun, you know, and it's just fabulous. So thank you for all the work. And also, as we think about July 4th and our freedoms and our rights and obligations, I think it's important to remember that today, in the United States of America, in the last 5 days, more than 10,000 people have been detained by ICE in a massive sweep, including a nun who was in her habit walking to church. who had legal status, and how many others of those 10,000 have legal status? There are more than 68,000 people who were detained, and I heard this data point that they have the capacity of 41,500 beds. So there are 68,000 people, all, you know, haven't had due process. So I think as we think about our rights and obligations and our freedoms, it's important to think about that we have a lot of work to do around leading up, meeting the provisions that are in the documents that you two are very eloquently educating us on.
Yeah, thank you. We're gonna talk about that more. We certainly talk with it about it with Fergus Bordovich this morning about kind of reflecting of where we. We reflected a little bit on in 200 celebrating the 200th anniversary, but doing little or none of that in this current quote unquote celebration.
I think that's really important, and I think it's important to distinguish between the America 250 celebrations, which America 250, they get an A+. They're the ones that were created by Congress in 2016. And unfortunately, there was a $150 million budget, of which they've only been allocated $25 million. And much of the rest went to Freedom 250, which is the Trump organization, and I give them an F. sadly, we'll probably talk about what's going on in the mall, this America Fair, the state fairs. It's sadly empty. I mean, it's really, these are opportunities. Anyway, we should talk about it more later. But
yeah.
But there is a distinction, and people can do things over the next year in their own communities.
I mean, I'm
sorry that I want to stay on this.
No, but that's fine. I am curious about the, it is empty, but it's also a billion degrees outside. And I do wonder what it would be like if it wasn't, but it is, but it certainly is quite barren.
You know, even before it was hot, it was still empty,
yes.
Which is sad. But I do think there's a problem today that it's dangerously hot. And they're talking about this very long program tonight, tomorrow night, the fireworks not starting until after his speech, which is supposed to be 10:30-ish or 11 if you have
right.
kids. I mean, that's too late for that.
It's 11:30 to 12 or something that they're going to start the fireworks? Yeah.
But, taking up too much time. The Capitol celebration, which is done by Congress, is going to be, they shifted it to July 3rd. So that'll be tomorrow night, and you can see it on PBS. The Capitol 4th, and they're going to do the fireworks, the simulcast from Mount Vernon, Washington's home, because they can't do it on the mall because of the next night's preparation. And so that is always a really wonderful thing to see. It's a mix of all types of music, country and blues and rock, and they honor our military, and so that'll be nice. And you can see it either go there or you. I always went there. I loved that.
Yeah.
One time, I got to go up to the top of the Capitol Dome and look down and watch the fireworks from there.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, Mike, the congressman I was working for, it was us and the National Geographic photographers and the Capitol photographers.
Oh, that's really cool.
Three staff. I was working for a congressman who chaired the Building and Grounds Subcommittee. And when you do that, you get access to this tiny little stairs that go up into the dome. And
bird's eye view.
Unbelievable. So there's it was an amazing moment.
Yeah. And the concert at Mount Vernon, Noe Greenwood.
Is that good or bad? I don't know who that is.
Oh, that's the Trump singer who does.
No, that's for the Capitol 4th?
No, that's the one on the mall.
Oh, yeah, no. The Capitol 4th is a whole different thing.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. The good thing about this one was Noe Greenwood.
Oh, no. I thought you said Noe. Who's Noe Greenwood? I missed.
I have to work on my enunciation.
No,
I'm sorry.
No. I'm culturally deprived. I don't know who these people are. But
oh, but once I play it for you during the break, you'll know exactly who I'm talking
no,
about. Telling you.
I know now. I just misunderstood what you're saying. Anyway, thank you for indulging me in way too much, but
Bo Breslin is here, Joseph Palamountain, Jr. Chair in Government at Skidmore College, my partner in crime on this in this project, and good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joe, and happy Independence Day. As you know, July 2nd is the actual Independence Day, right? I said this, I think, last year, but I'll remind folks as a way of finishing up my four most consequential weeks in American history series, my 90 seconds at the beginning. So July 2nd is the actual Independence Day because that's when the Second Continental Congress voted for independence. Remember, those of you who are listening, on June 7th, Richard Henry Lee stands up and has a resolution to declare independence. They stall, they postpone the actual vote on independence until July 2nd, because lots of states, including New York, needed to find out what their state legislatures wanted. So ultimately, on July 2nd, 1776, they voted in favor. John Adams was convinced that July 2nd would be the day that we would celebrate instead of July 4th. July 4th is the day in which the Continental Congress approves the Declaration of Independence. They're going to spend July 2nd and 3rd rewriting, editing, or what Jefferson would call mangling the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson was so egotistical about his first draft that he kept a copy of it, and he would copy it and send it throughout his life, the original draft, to people that he was corresponding with to remind them that his draft was better than the one that the Continental Congress had mangled on July 2nd and 3rd. Last thing I'll say, in a moment of incredible honor and virtue and civic duty, the great, one of the most famous and one of the most powerful Continental Congress members, a guy named John Dickinson from Pennsylvania. He's a Philadelphia delegate. He is opposed to independence and ultimately refuses to sign the Declaration of Independence, though he stays on. But as a show of great honor, he knows he's been fighting against independence. He knows he's lost on July 2nd. He stands up and he leaves the room so that the vote can be unanimous with him outside of the room. It's a great moment of he, you know, can you imagine that now? No, you know, somebody who's opposed to a particular issue probably would grandstand in that moment. But Dickinson removed himself from the room in order for the independence vote to go through unanimously.
You know, it's interesting because you bring that question up of who would do that now. But yeah. But I think you could imagine it maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Not, but just in the last two or three decades.
Or vote present. Yeah. People vote present. They pair votes.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I was in the Senate, they would pair votes. They would vote present. They would, you know, step
but as
out.
you know better than anybody in this room, Teresa, like your presence, your vote, your discussion on the congressional floor is now part of your brand, right? Mm-hmm. For Dickinson, he could have just continued to have a temper tantrum, but he removes himself because he knows he's lost that particular battle. And it's a big battle, the battle over independence.
Well, can you keep doing this for the whole year?
Just... No, because our 4 weeks, the most consequential 4 weeks is now over.
But there must be. This is so truly
no, Teresa, there is nothing of consequence beyond this.
We're going to go back to it's National Ice Cream Day.
Did you know? I was very careful not to check. I was going to email Bo saying, Bo, since I know you're going to do your thing.
Bill Hammond joins us, Senior Fellow for Health Policy at the Empire Center for Public Policy. A thrill to have Bill on, as always. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Joe. I have to say, I have to bring this up because it is a bright spot in our American story right now is our U.S. men's national team.
Yes.
Wow.
They won against Bosnia-Herzegovina last night, despite having a red card and losing a man.
They played well.
And I just think it's very cool that we're heading into July 4th with the dream alive, right? Like that, you know, that the U.S. is doing well in the World Cup.
It was an amazing game to watch.
Like,
And I was. Anyone else hear that? No.
Yes,
I think that's on. I think that's coming through. Okay. There you go. So Yeah, it was amazing to watch. So good stuff.
It's been different. Maybe I'm revisionist history here, but it feels like for the first time the U.S. isn't just like squeaking through each round.
That's actually
it's
true.
Winning games. It shut out its opponent yesterday. They've been impressive to watch, and they have. At this point in American history, we have American players who are serious professional players in Europe. So they're like, you know, not unknowns. They're not college players who never gave it up. This is how they make their living.
Can I ask?
Yeah, go ahead.
I World Cup, I know close to zero about years and years ago. I went and watched overnight in a bar and in Washington, D.C.
At the top of the Capitol. Yeah.
But
not with a bunch of National Geographic photographers.
No. But so I know nothing. But not the play. But I've been amazed by the countries that are playing against each other. But they're like in the fans singing each other's songs and like the camaraderie among the opposing teams. Is that typical? It's fascinating to watch. Is that?
I actually don't know what the atmosphere is at a typical World Cup, but it has been really nice to watch here, to watch, you know, to hear people singing the songs in the stands, wearing the colors. It seems like it's been mostly positive.
It's turned out to be way better than expected because, you know, originally there was a lot of the angst about the fact that ticket prices were high. But remember, the World Cup is the one sporting event, A, that the world enjoys, right, or that the world is behind, and B, that people will travel from their countries to go to, whether it's Qatar in 2022 or the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. So it's not just Americans sort of donning the Mexico or the Côte d'Ivoire uniform. These are real folks that are coming to the United States to participate. And so there's just Scotland— Boston, and you know it's just a very, very fun. It's one of the rare global celebratory events.
I was amused last night. I was watching. I was going back and forth between the Phillies game and the men's World Cup game, and the Phillies won 10-6. And at the end of the game, and it was a great win. They beat Pittsburgh at home. It was a great win. But the minute it was done, the stadium was empty.
Yeah.
Like, done.
Yeah.
And even though they were also having fireworks, but it was just done. And then I was watching the men's game, and nobody goes home. Like, nobody leaves. Everybody just stays, and that's just so cool.
Yeah,
and the camaraderie among the opposing teams is amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
Did I mention that the Red Sox swept the Yankees, by the way?
Yes. Okay.
I just had to keep that
in mind.
I'd be interested in seeing kind of a ethnographic analysis of World Cup teams because the U.S. has always been a nation of immigrants, as we say. There is no one ethnic group in the U.S. There really never has been. And so our team has always had kind of a mix of different nationalities and ethnicities as evidenced in the names of the players. But now you're seeing almost every team, England, Portugal, France, Scotland, they all have, to some extent, a mix. Yeah. Like you see African names on almost every team.
Yeah.
You see Eastern European names. You see South American names. And the teams may be sort of nationalistic. They're representing a country, but they've become much less ethnic.
Now, isn't one of the U.S. top U.S. men's players, isn't he an immigrant?
Well, no, so I think you're talking about Mr. Balogun, who's our leading scorer. He scored last night. He's it's not that he's an immigrant, but he's a beneficiary of the 14th Amendment birthright citizenship.
Oh, that's okay.
His parents were immigrants, and he was born in the U.S., so he's a U.S. citizen. But
so
he's birthright.
It's a good thing
citizen.
The Supreme Court ruled the way it did, or we wouldn't have our lead scorer.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have our leading scorer.
Well, as we worked on this in rehearsal, we will make it so today. So the story I want to talk about is the Supreme Court, how they left the session and birthright citizenship. So it you teed that up beautifully.
Yeah,
yeah, just perfectly. Again, as we planned it. We'll go to the stories here of what's going on. As I said, we're going to talk about the news of the day and then get all patriotic on you in our 10 o'clock hour. And we welcome your thoughts on any of the things that we have discussed and any of the things that we will discuss. Panel at WAMC.org. So I thought this was interesting. This is the Supreme Court scorecard for the 2025-2026 term. 33 cases decided, 8 decisions that decided with Trump, 4 decisions that decided against Trump. This is from information and data put together by the Washington Post. With final rulings this week, cases related to President Trump have dominated the Supreme Court's docket for the second straight term, and the stakes were very high. Justices upheld birthright citizenship and issued a ruling allowing states to bar transgender athletes from participating in women's sports. The court ruled that Trump cannot continue with most of his sweeping tariffs, the hallmark of his economic agenda. It has also struck down a longtime precedent letting Congress insulate agencies from political influence, but stopped short of giving Trump the same power over the Federal Reserve. So a lot going on within the court, a lot to look, a lot to navigate, to see where we are and what it means for our future. And I wanted to go over with our group this morning because, of course, we all were looking at the birthright citizenship case, although I think we were fairly sure of how that one was going to end. But there were some surprises in the last 2 days. Teresa.
I mean, I feel like I need to, I defer to Bo, the constitutional expert, but
I think
birthright citizenship, the thing that's interested me about birthright citizenship is the range of people who are opposed to the decision and feel that Congress must act. I've heard now Congressman Lawler, who's congressman running in the 17th, one of the swingiest districts in the congressional districts in the country, must watch races, and he is adamant that there needs to be a constitutional amendment to change it. To me, not a constitutional scholar, this one, I mean, it's just so fundamental to who we are as a country. So I find it really interesting and concerning. And the language that a lot of people are using around why we need the amendment. Are we not a nation of immigrants? And I thought it was interesting. I'm no fan of former President Ronald Reagan, but I think some folks should go back and listen to his final speech as president, where he reminded us all that we are a nation of immigrants and how that's at the core of who we are and what we are. And he talks about, you know, you can't go to France and become a French citizen. He goes through this litany of countries, but you can come from anywhere around the world and come to the United States and become an American. And so I just think this is so fundamental to who we are. It's curious people like Congressman Lawler are so adamant against it. The other thing I think of, I'll say two others, is the TPS, which I think that temporary protected status. And again, who are we as a country if people are here with legal temporary status and we'll send them back to extremely dangerous situations? And the other, what the Trump deeply cared about, but it was a while ago, but I think it's very, very impactful to our economy. Think about the impacts on our economy, is the tariffs case. And I think that that has had short and long-term economic implications and how globally it's disrupted our alliances. It's disrupted our economy, and it's disrupted our alliances and economies around the world.
Well. So Mr. Lawler is just doing what most Congress members. I'll start there, and then I've got you guys are going to have to give me the hook at some point because Mr. Lawler is just doing what most Congress members will do in this particular moment.
I gave you the whole week. Isn't that enough?
I know. People are actually tired.
Hardly.
Yeah.
Why is that responsive to his constituents, though?
Well, so my point is, there are always important Supreme Court cases that get Congress up in arms, Congress members from particular parties up in arms, and they know full well that it's not going anywhere. This is one of them, and the other one that is you guys will remember is when the Supreme Court comes out with a decision that protects Mr. Johnson, happens to be the guy named Mr. Johnson's, right to burn the flag. All of a sudden, it became the congressional thing to say we need a constitutional amendment that protects the flag. This will go nowhere. Mike Lawler's, concern about birthright citizenship, and we need a constitutional amendment to eliminate the 14th Amendment First Clause constitutional amendment, will go nowhere. I want to make a bigger issue because, as Joe and I have talked about over the week, the birthright citizenship case is super important, and it's critical for commit to the idea of A, this is an immigrant society; B, there are freedoms that are associated with being born in these nice, and C, the first clause of the 14th Amendment essentially overturns Dred Scott, right? The most horrible case, but it's not a consequential case in the same way that some of these ones that get less attention are consequential cases. So I'll organize these cases very quickly into three areas in which the Trump administration has had considerable success with the Supreme Court. One, threats to popular sovereignty, right? So what I would describe as threats to democracy or popular sovereignty. The case just the other day where political parties are no longer limited in their coordinated expenditures on behalf of candidates is Citizens United from a political party perspective. We should talk about that. Two, right? Don't forget these cases early on in the term. Alabama can use the congressional map that erases one of two minority-majority districts. That's a big deal. Three, the Louisiana case that decapitated the Voting Rights Act by saying that the principle underlying the Voting Rights Act, namely that the South can't be trusted, is no longer applies. Really? The South can no longer be trusted to give minority voters, some sort of vote. So one area in which the court has fully given the Trump administration victories, even though they're not reflected in this 8-4, the 8-4 vote. One of the ways is the threats to popular sovereignty and democracy. The other two ways, quickly, trans LGBTQ plus issues, right? States can bar trans athletes. That was the most recent one. But there are earlier ones in the term. California can no longer discourage teachers from approaching parents when a student is considering transitioning. Three, Colorado can no longer ban conversion therapy as a possible psychological treatment. Four, no self-identity gender. You can no longer self-identify your gender on your passports. It has to be what you had on your birth certificate. So the attack on trans and LGBTQ plus issues is not just last week with the trans athletes. It's been going on all term. Finally, three, the big one that people spend a lot of time thinking about is presidential power. It's not just eight victories for Trump and four defeats. The fact that early on in the term, the Supreme Court said that the Trump administration could gut the Department of Education, could remove members of the Consumer Protection Board because they are of the opposite party. Remember, he removed three people because they're Democrats. Cut NIH grants. The Supreme Court said, sure, you can cut NIH grants. Four, you can eliminate USAID. The court said, sure, you can eliminate USAID. the one that Teresa mentioned, TPS for Haitians and Syrians, but also the fact that now Border Patrol can turn away asylum seekers at the border, right? That the Supreme Court upheld that in January. And finally, the big one that happened the other day, which was the you can fire disloyal independent agency heads. So in three particular areas, threats to democracy, trans and LGBTQ plus rights, and presidential power, the Trump administration had a very good year this year from the Supreme Court.
Bill?
I mean, I'm not going to argue. Obviously, Bo knows a lot about this. I guess I find the framing in the Washington Post article and a lot of the analysis of, like, which ones did Trump win and which ones did Trump lose? I feel like it's unfortunate that we're looking at it that way.
But
I think I'm not as gloomy about the Supreme Court as maybe Bo is and Teresa, because it's important to remember that when they take a case, they're not, at least they shouldn't be thinking about, are trans rights good or bad? They're looking at it like, what is the procedural thing that a state is allowed to do versus the federal government versus personal liberty? So to bring up a random example, the ban on trans therapy, there are free speech rights implicated in that, right?
Sure.
A therapist wants to be able to say what they think to their patient. Their patient wants to be able to choose their therapist. There's freedom rights there. And for a state to say you can't do that infringes people's freedoms. And the court, that's what the court was saying, is you can't infringe people's freedoms. It's not saying we love conversion therapy or that they support conversion therapy. That wasn't the issue in front of them. Another one where I don't understand the intricacies of this, but I'm a believer that our political parties should be more powerful and not we tend to think that they have power that they don't really have. They don't control who their candidates are. They don't even necessarily control who their members are. And so my instinct is, if allowing political parties to spend more money on their preferred candidates might actually be a good thing for our politics. I know in this particular moment of our history, the analysis seems to be that it's going to favor Republicans over Democrats, but over the long term, I think it's better for everybody if political parties can kind of exercise more influence over who their members are and who their candidates are, because that's how most Americans vote. They don't like go into a deep analysis of an individual candidate's positions. They go and they pull the lever behind the party that they feel most aligned with.
My beef is, very quickly, Bill, my beef with that particular case is not that it's going to favor Republicans, which it will favor Republicans in the short term, is that the money in politics is now continually unlimited, right? So it was that Citizens United changed the game completely so that the Elon Musks of the world could give $185 million to super PACs that support a particular candidate. And I'm just as troubled by George Soros giving $185 million to the other side. I'm just as troubled by that. Now you've taken the cap off of political parties' ability to fund particular candidates, and all of a sudden it becomes impossible for the four of us in this room who have virtually no influence except for being on the radio, right? Have no influence. The idea that we are a country based in popular sovereignty is lost when the Elon Musks of the world and the Democratic and Republican parties can spend unteen millions of dollars on candidates. I've said, and before I hand it over to Teresa, I will say publicly every single moment I can, the one change that I would make to our political system is public funding of campaigns. That would make it much more fair, just, and reasonable.
Well, I think on the financing one, the caps is the issue there. It's the shifting in power, but the big issue is unlimited amounts of money. But I just want to echo and applaud you, Bill, for questioning the framing. When I saw the headline on that story, as we read it last night, I too was really uneasy about did Trump win or lose? And it really shows where we are on these cases. And that's why I think the two cases that struck me the most were the tariffs case, because of the global impact that Trump's decision had, economic impact and political impact. And both that one and birthright citizenship, there's a question of how political is the court? How far will they go to bend to the wishes of this president? And those two decisions show that there were limits to how much they were willing to bend the Constitution to his whims. And so while he got a lot of power, but that's not really, I know it's how he's framing it and how it should be framed, but that's a king, not a democracy, framing. So I appreciate that and want to echo what you said.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your input, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. The problem is I got a lot of brains, but no polish. I gotta holler just to be heard with every word. I drop knowledge. I'm a diamond in the rough. A shiny piece of coal, trying to reach my goal. My power of speech, unimpeachable. Only 19, but my mind is older. These New York City streets get cold. I shoulder every burden, every disadvantage I've learned to manage. I don't have a gun to brandish. I walk these streets famished. The plan is to fan this spark into a flame. But damn, it's getting dark, so let me spell out the name. I am the A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. We are meant to be a colony that runs independently. Meanwhile, Britain keep beating on us endlessly. Essentially, they tax us relentlessly. Then King George turns around, runs a spending spree. He ain't never gonna set his descendants free. So there will be a revolution in this century. Enter me.
He says in parentheses.
Don't be shocked when your history book mentions me. I will lay down my life if it sets us free. Eventually, you'll see my ascendancy. And I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. And I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this 2nd of July, 10 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock. We are talking about the Supreme Court and the major Supreme Court decisions from the 2025-2026 case docket and the decisions done there. So it is an interesting conversation. You, I believe, wanted to bounce off what Teresa had said.
And what Bill had said. I'm with you both on the sort of shallowish Washington Post coverage. What I will say about the Washington Post coverage, which I think is super helpful for us to think about, is that they had a graphic. You can't see it on the radio, but they have a graphic of the images of the faces and who's in each of the cases, who's in the majority and who's in the minority. And if you look through the 33 cases that they have, it's super interesting to see where Roberts bounces back and forth. Now, Roberts is going to 8 out of 10 times is going to side with the conservatives. But I'm always, and I get lots of people who really criticize me in this, lots of liberals who really criticize me. Roberts is trying to hold the court together in an environment in which Alito and Thomas are running the show. And so what you see in cases like birthright citizenship and so on is Roberts trying to maintain the court's credibility and not be, as Bill correctly points out, not be political. So do I think, the justices are making decisions on conversion therapy, First Amendment stuff, free speech, whatever it is, or the democracy? Do I think they're making political decisions? Bill, no, I don't think they're making political decisions. But what is there are a couple of factors that play into it. One is which cases they take, right? So they didn't have to take. They get 8,000 to 9,000 petitions every year. They take about 60 cases a year, right? So that's also misleading. The 33 cases that the Washington Post, they did 67 this year. But so the conversion therapy, some of these other cases, they don't have to take the they don't need to take those cases and hear them on the merits. So that's one piece. And then the other piece, yes, I think you're right. Right, these people are not corrupt, right? These nine justices, maybe Thomas is a little bit, but they're not corrupt.
So we've been
corrupt. There is that RV and that time
RV
in Saranac Lake.
And the mortgage of his mother. Yeah, whatever.
I think that's where your letters are going to come in, but okay, go ahead.
But they are still decisions have consequences that affect people's lives in both good and bad ways, and the court doesn't seem to care as much as they used to, Warren, Cordier, and so on, about the consequences.
Yes, I feel like they do have agendas. They're more intellectual, judicial agendas, and those agendas don't necessarily align neatly with our left-right Democrat-Republican divides. And I think I give them, so for example, a big example I would say is the limits of executive power, right? That this happens to align with what Trump wants, that he thinks this concept of the unitary executive, he shouldn't have these quasi-independent agencies that the president can't control. I think there are members of the Supreme Court who have agreed with that point since before Trump was president. And he has put it on the agenda of the court. He has done things that have forced the issue, and that has opened the door for the judges who feel that way to rule that way. And so there is kind of an alignment between the president and that wing of the court, and it has produced significant precedents. And I don't think that's like because the court wanted to help Trump. I think it's kind of a historical coincidence.
Right. And that's why the framing issue is a matter.
But the other thing to remember, though, is that the court, I think that Congress should be playing. We talk about this a lot on this show, that Congress could be exerting itself in a way that would moot some of these cases. That the court should not, the court should be the goalie on the soccer team, to go back to the World Cup, and you don't want the goalie to touch the ball as little as possible. You want the midfield and the defense to stop the ball before it gets to your goalie. And so the Supreme Court should be the goalie, and unfortunately it's catching way too many balls because Congress is not doing its job.
And I don't know enough about soccer to follow on that analogy, but I know what a goalie is, but not really what he or she does. But I think, first of all, just a little amendment. I think that the Washington Post content was extremely useful and laid out in a very, you know, very, very well done. I just think that framing of, you know, Trump. I also think, Bill, a lot of this is, you know, Trump signs executive orders, but I think people like Russ Vogt are behind the content. I think that the way that they're going after various aspects of the Constitution is not from him. It's from a couple of people around him that are
he
really,
may be one of these unitary executive type
right,
believers,
but it's Russ Vogt and those kind of people who know they know to go after the regulatory agencies and those kinds of things, which I doubt that Trump would have ever had any idea to do that, that they know the levers to push, and they're pushing. They're testing as much as they possibly can, and he's sitting there signing the executive orders to do what they're suggesting he does. But I do think that it's interesting. As we celebrate the 250th anniversary, some people are lamenting, you know, what a challenging time it is in our democracy. But in a way, it's really forcing us to look at the various aspects of our Constitution in ways that we haven't had in a long time. It's a challenging time, but it's kind of coincidentally interesting in that it really understanding, you know, what is it to be an American? Are we really a nation of immigrants? You know, what are the rules and constraints of our democracy, and does the three branch system really work, and how does it work, and how to keep that in balance? I do think that particularly on the temporary protective status, Congress could act. They could come back if Mike Johnson would stop sending the House home because he can't control his caucus. If he would bring the House back and the Senate back, they could address the issue around Haitians and Syrians and others with temporary protective status. Yeah. Immediately.
Well, that's assuming they could get the votes.
No, what I'm saying is some of these things that are extremely egregious could be fixed. I don't think that the birthright citizenship shouldn't. It's fundamental to our democracy. But I think that the interpretation of yes, we need overall immigration reform. But in the case of this, there's a congressional fix for that. If only that branch of government, the legislative branch, the Republicans who are in control, were operating as traditionally they have.
Very quickly, can I just say one thing to Bill?
Yes.
Okay, so Bill, you're right. Here's the problem, though. And when you talk about the way in which this court happens to, the conservative court happens to align with the president, I've said this before, the genius of our constitutional system is that each institution of federal government has a role. House of Representatives represents the local interests, Senate represents state interests, President represents national interests, and the court's responsibility is to represent those who don't have a voice in the political process. That's where they're failing. And I'm not talking about transgender and LGBTQ. I'm talking about the erosion of democracy, where the court has over and over again this term chipped away at those voices that don't have a place in the political process. Their job is to protect those people, whether they're white, black, Catholic, Muslim, LGBTQ, whatever. Their job is to protect those who don't have a voice in the political process. That's where they're failing.
Let's take a break. We will continue our conversation. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Bill Hammond, Beau Breslin, and Teresa Bourgeois. We will return after this news update.
Though in reviewing the incidents of my administration, I am unconscious of intentional error, I am nevertheless too sensible of my defects not to think it probable that I may have committed many errors. I shall also carry with me the hope that my country will view them with indulgence, and that after 45 years of my life dedicated to its service with an upright zeal, the faults of incompetent abilities will be consigned to oblivion, as I myself will soon be to the mansions of rest. I anticipate with pleasing expectation that retreat in which I promise myself to realize the sweet enjoyment of partaking in the midst of my fellow citizens, the benign influence of good laws under a free government, the ever-favorite object of my heart, and the happy reward, as I trust, of our mutual cares, labors, and dangers. One last time.
George Washington's going home.
I'll teach him how to say goodbye.
George Washington's going home.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 7.5 minutes past 10 o'clock on this second date of July. Very nice to have you with us. We thank you for being,
here.
Well, here, but joining us and being our company for the day. It's very nice, or at least for the morning. Although no one in programming will mind if you're here for the day. We also invite you to join us and join us in the conversation, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So at this point in the program, I was going to read some of the letters that we have.
But we apparently are having some internet issues, and I can't access my anything. So
so should we just imagine what people are saying?
So yeah, I'm going to start in our next on the next stories and talk a little bit about what I wanted to talk about here for this hour about patriotism and this and independence and the state of America at 2:50 and. Later on, when I I'm sure everything will clear up, and everything will whatever's in the way of the satellite will move, and then I get letters. I'll read those too.
What's that Elon Musk doing with Starlink? He didn't like what you were saying, so he flipped the switch.
You know,
joking.
You know. There was a time in this building where we had meetings that was exactly something that came up. Okay, so there is a poll that is out, and it is about Americans and how they feel. The pride that Americans have in this country. This from the Associated Press. Americans have grown less proud of their country's history or the way its democracy works over the past decade, according to a new Associated Press poll. Americans' pride in the U.S. on several key attributes, pop-up ad, has dropped since 2017, including the nation's military and its political influence around the globe. That according to the survey. The poll was conducted in April as the United States and Iran fought over the Strait of Hormuz in a prolonged war that started with the U.S. and Israel launching strikes on Iran. New Gallup polling also finds that only 53% of U.S. adults are extremely or very proud to be an American, the lowest reading in the trend dating back to 2001. The findings point to a broad decline in patriotic sentiment over a tumultuous period that included most of President Donald Trump's first term, the COVID-19 pandemic, and rising inflation that contributed to a backlash against President Joe Biden. That time frame also covers Trump's return to the White House, where he's taken more aggressive actions on immigration and issues abroad. Much of the falling positivity comes from Democrats who have become increasingly disenchanted with the country since Trump's first term. At the same time, most U.S. adults say that being an American is extremely or very important to their identity, highlighting an enduring connection, even as some become increasingly critical of the country's past or the government's current actions. There is more to this poll, but that is certainly will get us started, Bill Hammond.
Well, I was curious because they said that the two options that they're quoting in that article are extremely and very proud, right? Well, that still leaves, apparently the poll also had the option of moderately and only a little. But all of those things are still proud, right?
Like degree of pride, yes.
The number of Americans who are actually not at all proud of their country is pretty small. So just to put a little context. My sense of this poll is that really what it's tracking is partisan sentiment, right? Like when a Republican's in office, Democrats are going to feel worse about the country. And when a Democrat's in office, a Republican's going to feel worse about the country. It did seem like there was a decline across the board so that Republicans were expressing less pride, but not to the degree that Democrats were. And maybe that has to do with just like the level of anger and partisan bitterness that does seem to be especially high in the last 20 years. So, I guess I'm not super surprised at the results here. There's probably a certain amount of people. I certainly have done some soul searching about my own patriotic instincts, and I know that members of my family have done the same thing, that like, you know, we're sort of asking, you know, what if our country can do the things it is doing now, what does it really mean to be an American? And what you know, it has been a hard time.
I was watching this fascinating video from the BBC last night. It was about 12 minutes long, and they went around the country and talked to people about how they feel about America. And there was this one guy who said, "I'm very proud of my country. I'm extremely proud of my country. More proud than you should be as a British person." And that struck me that it was, it's a competition too. That's we also look at how we view this. And I thought that was very instructive as well. But
I think Bill's right about the sort of partisan nature of this. I'm going to be a little bit self-reflective in this moment. I hope the listeners will indulge me. I'm extremely proud of being an American. Am I disappointed with the way in which our foreign policy, our domestic policy, Congress's inability to work, Trump administration, aspirations, Supreme Court stuff? Yeah, I'm super disappointed about that. But when I think about, and as listeners know, I spent a lot of my time thinking about late 18th century America. This is an interesting question. What is the most amended clause in the U.S. Constitution? Anybody want to take a guess? I'll give you the answer. It's "We the People." It's the it's the preamble, the first three words of the preamble. It's the most amended because at the time, late 18th century America, only property white men were "We the People." Now, who's "We the People"? Is it as robust and fulsome as I would like under the tent? No, because of administration and other policies. But at no fewer than six constitutional amendments, 13, 14, 15, the constitutional amendment that gave women the right to vote, the constitutional amendment that lowered voting age from 21 to 18, that included people under the tent, the constitutional amendment that eliminated poll taxes, no fewer than six constitutional amendments have enhanced what it means to be "We the People" and included more folks in that particular phrase. That's why I'm proud to be an American. Are we better in race relations than we used to be? Yes. Do we have a long way to go? Yes. But we're better in race relations. Are we better in gender issues? As a white male, I am privileged beyond recognition. But yes, we're better in gender-related issues. So I am extremely proud to be an American. I would have voted in that particular way, but I can also, and the last thing I'll say, Joe, on this topic, being extremely proud to be an American, part of it is because we can have these conversations on the air, in the streets, in my classrooms, in which we can criticize each other and the government, and we're not going to get thrown in jail. That in and of itself is reason to be proud of to be an American.
I would like to, and yes, there is the asterisk. I want, and we'll get to that in just a second. I do want to invite people to be a part of that conversation right now, that this is a great time that we can include a lot of your letters. Now that my email is working.
Yeah.
We could include a lot of your letters in that conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Panel@wamc.org. How do you feel? And responding to what the panel is telling us this morning. Panel@wamc.org. Teresa.
Yeah, I think for me, the "We the People" is really where I wanted to go with this, because it has expanded exponentially. But I think part of the angst that's going on over these last few years under the Trump administration, because of the views of people like, you know, Russ Vogt and Stephen Miller and Donald Trump and others, and Hegseth at definitely testing the waters on "We the People," it's contracted. They're trying to contract the rights of women. They're certainly dismantling the Civil Rights Act to contract the rights. But I think that just as people, you know, when you talk about Gaza or other things, what's going on in and around Israel, I think you can't conflate being opposed to the Netanyahu government and its actions with being broadly opposed to Israel and being anti-Semitic. And in the same way, I think in the United States, we can be for against, we can be against the actions that the Trump-Vance administration is taking. We can be against the way that the Supreme Court is adjudicating that. We can be against the way that the House and Senate Republicans are just, would seemingly, in my view, stepping back from their duties and shifting the authorities, just shifting the balance among the three branches of government over to the executive. But we can still love our country. And I will say that this is going to sound Pollyannish, but last night I was listening to a conversation about this poll, and Republican pundit Scott Jennings said that Democrats are not patriotic. The problem is in this country, Democrats, and they were talking about why there were so few people at the state fair in Washington. And he said, that's because we have a patriotism problem, and particularly on either coast, because Democrats hate their country. They hate America. And that made me so sad. I mean, I literally tear, like, how has it come to this? And I think, you know, he gets clicks. That's great. I don't know if he really believes it or not. But
I wouldn't get too upset about what he says.
No, but I think
consistent with the poll results.
But no, it's not consistent with the poll results.
They hate America, but they like America less than Republicans do.
You can't go from, you know, like you pointed out the poll. It's, you know, extremely proud, sort of proud, or not proud at all. Yeah. Very few people are not proud at all. And there's a big difference between not proud and hate America.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate that the Hegseth Defense Department is pushing very accomplished women and African Americans out of our service. I hate that they are without oversight shooting people in fishing boats and saying that they're drug boats with no evidence. I hate that in the last week, 10,000 people in 5 days were rounded up, many of them going into their hearings in federal courts around the country to keep up their, whatever their legal status is that they are, because they're not yet citizens. And now they're incarcerated in many cases in conditions that are described as inhumane. That does not make me proud to be an American. But that doesn't mean I hate America. I hate some of the things that America is doing right now. It breaks my heart. But, Bo, I will echo. But what is the beauty of America is that we can talk about it. People can go stand in front of the detention centers and must do it peacefully and say, this is not right. This is not who we are. People can go and stand on street corners, and most importantly, they can go vote. And that's the difference. And that's what I love about America. And I love we can have debates and discussions, and then we can still be friends, not so much anymore. And then I love that there is hope that we can change this, that we can turn this around, that we can say, no, it's not right in this country to say that you're going after the worst of the worst and you arrest a nun who's walking to church, who has here from Nigeria with legal status, who is helping the poor people in a poor town of Texas, and she gets arrested and incarcerated. And so, in any case, I think there's a difference between not being proud of what the country's doing and not being proud of the country.
The other thing that is that's important in this conversation, Teresa, Bill, Joe, is that we have a tendency, and we've always had a tendency, so it's not surprising, we have a tendency to associate America with elected officials, right, or political figures, so that somehow the reflection on America is those people who occupy positions of power in Washington particularly, but also at the state level. When I think about America, I don't necessarily always think about what's coming out of Washington. I think about, you know, the fact that the beauty out west, right, or the fact that we can go to the Adirondacks, and the sheer and the privilege economically, commercially, I would not have been a PhD faculty member, political scientist at a fantastic place like Skidmore had I not won the birth lottery by being born in the United States, right? Could I have made my way to Skidmore? Sure. But I started with advantages that I think are important for us to remember. And we are, as much as this is, Teresa is absolutely right. I have spent the last year and a half on this show talking about the erosion of freedom and liberty. We're still the most free society in the world, right? That doesn't mean that I can't criticize the United States, but our ability to criticize the United States is part of why we have the highest level of freedom across the globe.
Yeah, so underneath the soccer team and the Purple Mountains Majesty and the Adirondacks and all is a set of ideas. And like, I watched the Ken Burns documentary, and it was a reminder of like how truly revolutionary those ideas were in their moment. They seem corny to us now. We the people, all men are created equal, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They're so embedded in us. We've had them chanted to us throughout our lives. But at that time, they were totally revolutionary, and they reverberated around the world. Like, they set off revolutionary movements for centuries to come. And I remember there was a historian on that documentary who said, you know, when African countries rose up against European colonialism, they explicitly cited the American Declaration of Independence and the principles in there. Even the communist countries felt obliged to put the word democratic in their name, even though it wasn't true. We literally stood as a pillar of our set of ideals when competing ideals look like they might come to dominate the planet. And our system, for the time being, won out. But there's still all of China is following a very different system. And large parts of the places like Russia are more authoritarian. This is like the revolution is still kind of going on, I guess, is what
Absolutely.
I'm leading up to. And that's there's a part of me who grew up buying into all of that, and I still buy into all of that. It's probably partly because I was indoctrinated in it. I grew up during the civil rights movement. I saw one of the, and also the women's liberation movement, which is what Bo was just talking about, this idea that we the people being expanded. I saw that happen in real time and thought it was a wonderful thing. I was never, maybe it's just because I was an impressionable youth and my teachers were telling me the right things, but like, that was like, you know, of course we should be doing that. And that this is exactly what our country should be about. And so I guess I'm lucky enough to feel corny about America. I would also say I would put myself in the extremely proud category. I will say one thing that I have noticed among my Democratic friends is they don't like displays of patriotism.
Yeah.
They're much less likely to hang a flag or to, and they will kind of even kind of shudder when they see a flag.
And that's in part because of the fact that the MAGA movement has co-opted some of those important symbols. I'll just say one thing before I throw it over to Teresa. Ken Burns is particularly good at this, right? We came into the American Revolution as subjects. We came out as citizens. That's not an insignificant revolutionary and absolutely new idea back in late 18th century. So hear, Bill.
But is
no, I was just going to say, just real quick on the flag. I mean, that was such a big part of my growing up.
Oh yeah.
Of getting, as I've been saying a lot over the last several days, that you know, I was born in Washington D.C., moved to Philadelphia, and you know, those are two big like history towns. So we like the whole flag and putting up the flag and getting the flag that flew over Congress and I mean and over the Capitol. I mean that was always a huge deal in our house. And then and suddenly it just faded away. And even with my mom and dad before they passed, because there was just that time where it started to erode.
Yeah. See, I think two things. On the flag, I'm always big about the flag. I have a flag in my car. I have a flag at the house. But at the various protests that I've gone to, one of the things I've been amazed at is the omnipresence of flags, big flags, little flags, waving flags, kids with flags, flag pins. So I think that the MAGA doesn't own the flag, and I think that there's an effort to take that back.
Effort is the right word.
Effort to take that back. And but I also keep thinking of the phrase, you know, it's, you know, what do we have? We have a democracy if we can keep it, right? And if we can, I know you're going to say.
Careful. It was a republic if we can keep it. And they are different.
Sorry. Okay.
No worries.
So maybe this is not going to work. But let's focus on the if we can keep it part.
Can we work this out in a minute?
No, because I know he's right about the facts, but I want the theory.
Go ahead.
The big picture thing is, I think it's the if we can keep it, that it's a job and it's ever, we have to work at it. And I think that's what we're doing now. We're all working at it and we have to work a little harder because it's being challenged so much.
Agreed. Let's take a break. We have a whole other half hour to talk about this stuff, and we welcome you. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We will be right back.
What do you want, girl? What do you want, girl? If you stand for nothing, girl, what do you fall for?
I want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. Wanna be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. I wanna be in the room where it happens. I wanna be in the room where it happens.
Look, I don't want to cause a revolution or anything, and God knows this is not a competition, but you want to talk about the room where it happens. Well, here we are. Teresa Bourgeois, Bo Breslin, Bill Hammond, Joe
Proud Donahue. Americans.
Good morning.
Proud Americans, you. One and all.
All right.
Flag waving, proud Americans.
Just as we finished up the last segment, Bo said, "We have any letters?" And oh my God!
Yay! We the people have expanded.
I asked, and you responded. You still have time to get them in, by the way. We're going to talk about this for another half hour or so. So you certainly have time. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. So these are admittedly all over the place. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have not put them in any category at all. We'll just go in the order of their arrival.
Leave out the ones condemning me because I don't know anything about soccer.
Okay. Done. It's truly a shame that the country's attitude has developed to a point where disagreeing with a political party equates with hating it. It was a couple of decades ago when Rudy Giuliani started this nonsense by saying Barack Obama does not love his country because his ideas did not match with those of his party. Now we have Trump and the MAGA wackos pointing the same finger. It's a marketing ploy, and frankly, it is a reflection on the fact that they don't love their country. There is no tolerance for disagreement in their world. Those of us having grown up in which side are you on mentality, you see it coming around again and know that it doesn't work. And nothing good comes from it.
So wait a second. If I followed that correctly.
Yes.
The people who say that the Democrats don't love their country are the ones who don't love their country?
Look, that's what I got. That's what I got out of it.
I loved 98% of that. But the percent I didn't like is what. But also, I would send it back to Newt Gingrich. This current iteration where the seeds of that were sown by Newt Gingrich.
Lynn says, I'm not patriotic. The myth of freedom and liberty doesn't take the place of having food, shelter, and health care. All those things have been denied to 50% of the people in this country for more than 100 years. This has been an oligarchy for so long we forget and cannot remember when it wasn't. That from Lynn. We go to Ricky. Having attended some of the anti-Trump No Kings demonstrations, I can attest that there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of American flags. They were everywhere. I am skeptical about the idea that Democrats are less reverent towards our flag than MAGA Republicans. Further, our nation is great and strong not because of the flag, but because of our principles, our ideals, and the people. Then we go to Lillian. You are not correct. England has freedom. Germany has freedom. France has freedom. There are countries all around the world that have freedom. We are not the only country that has freedom. We are the only country that has more billionaires than any other
country. And those countries caught freedom from us.
Yeah, and let's be clear. I forgot the name of the...
Lillian.
Lillian. I did not say that other countries don't have freedom, but we rank as high or higher in the Freedom Monitor than those countries, too. So let's be clear. I'm not saying that other countries don't.
But we appreciate your letter, Lillian.
No, but I guess what I was...
We have a third diplomat on the show.
There were the beginnings of what we call freedom and liberty before the United States existed. There were certainly
the Native Americans,
traditions in England.
The Native Americans had freedom amongst themselves
that we built on. But I do think that our ideas spread to countries like England and France, especially France, but also Germany. And that they are republics and democracies to the extent that they are, in part because of the precedent that we set. So,
But our structure...
I wouldn't want to diminish the level of freedom that other countries have. It's just that I think we can take pride in our role in promoting it around the world.
But our structure of government was built on the ideas of other governments before us and on the Native American Great Laws of Peace and other inputs, right? So, anyway, letters.
Francis says, I love my country. I believe I am patriotic. I am young, scrappy, and hungry. Go Knicks.
Not giving away your shot.
Oh, thank you.
We then go to...
Hope for the future, that's how.
We go to Beth, who says, 50 years ago during the bicentennial, I feel there was more to be proud and optimistic about. The highlight for me for this 250th celebration has been the WAMC special programming. Thank you, Joe and Bo. Yeah. I've also gotten a lot of enjoyment watching the camaraderie of the World Cup games go Cape Verde, more so than any 250th celebration. And
I think that's true. I do think that there was a higher level of enthusiasm, patriotism, and just excitement at the bicentennial than today.
And I know for me how important it was, what a great time for our community. There was a lot of coming together and learning and education and such. And certainly this is missing, and I think part of it is because of the America 250 group that was designed to do it was undercut by the Trump-Vance administration's meddling. But I do think this weekend is the start, not the end of the celebration of the year. And I've been talking with some other friends about this. It's really, okay, it's not going to come from the federal government. It might not come from our own communities. But there we can do it ourselves. There's a lot of places that you can go. I know in our own hometown, Van Skuyk Mansion is core to the revolution, or the Schuyler House. There are places you can go. There are gatherings. You can bring speakers in. You can, take advantage of people like Bo and you guys. And there's ways that I think, but young people are not going to have that same experience that I know that I, all these years later, still remember. And that is too bad, but there's still time to fix it.
We go to this from Christopher. I haven't fact-checked this, but the 10 most free countries, according to Chris, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Ireland, Luxembourg, Estonia, New Zealand, Finland, Netherlands, Switzerland.
We're not even in the top 10.
I was thinking about all of the, not all of them, but many of those when you were talking about who's free and who's not. Yeah, thank you for
Sometimes the groups who do those lists have an idea of freedom, like it's based on like, does everybody get an apartment or something like that?
Food.
Like
they have these, everybody get food and health care?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's not an illegitimate way of looking at it, but it's a different definition.
Fresh squeezed orange juice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We go to
Betsy, who says, please note that civic freedom in the USA is now rated obstructed. We are no longer as free as we were. We are now 81 out of 100. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for that, Betsy. But we can work on that as a country, as a people. It's up to us.
Brant says, speaking to love of the flag, weren't MAGA people the ones who flew American flags that were upside down with black and blue stripes? Mm. That from Brant. We go to Andy, who says, our freedoms are based on English traditions that date to the Anglo-Saxons and continue through the English monarchy and the concept of governance through consent of the governed. Second, the French Revolution wasn't a nothing burger. The mytopia displayed by educated Americans is shocking. That from
the French
Andy.
Revolution was a direct response to the American Revolution. It went very wrong.
I have to say that we're getting a lot of letters. So we welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. I'm going to rip through as many as I can here. I mean, carefully read. Wesley writes, do MAGAs think that destroying our national monuments, the White House, the Reflecting Pool, the Kennedy Center, chopping down cherry trees, dumping toxic waste on the public golf courses, and turning it into a private club is patriotic? Trump doesn't own any of these properties. We, the people, do. That from Wesley.
I mean, that I 100% agree with. It's all of that's terrible.
And there are places where you can express your view. The Preservation League, and it's not an exact title, in Washington, D.C., There's an opportunity, and one, I think July 7th is a deadline coming up about the arch, where if you're concerned about these places being the way they're being changed, you have an opportunity to express your view about it.
Sherry, I need more information on Sherry's letter, but here we go. Stop putting down the people who disagree with you. What makes you all experts on patriotism? I don't know who we put down, but that's okay. Everyone is entitled to their opinions. If they disagree with you, that does not mean they're wrong. You need a bit more self-awareness. I love my country. I dislike what those intolerant fat cat rich people are doing to it.
Yeah, I think that was my point, is that we can disagree. We have the freedom to disagree vehemently as long as it doesn't get violently.
And you could even say go Cape Verde when you're expressing your pride in the United States.
That's right. Yes, good point.
Well, one of the beautiful things I think about the World Cup is they're competing against each other, but they are interacting in a positive way with each other.
Fraternal. Yeah. And, well, maybe. So that is kind of this weird, when you're rooting for your team, you're rooting for it simply because it's your team. Because, like, sort of like when you go to a high school basketball game, you're rooting for your high school.
Right.
It's a completely arbitrary thing in that sense. But everybody else is doing the same thing, and you kind of appreciate that, of course, the Congo people are rooting for Congo, and the Argentines are rooting for Argentina. Like, it all makes sense, and it's all peaceful and happy. But
I think some of these letters are getting at the point that, you know, and again, I trace this back, I'm not a historian, but to this current iteration, to Newt Gingrich and the rhinos. You have to be all in and hate the other side. Right? You can't work with across party lines, that kind of thing. And that is wrong. That's not how our democracy is going to work well. And I know Senator Kennedy, he would go on the Senate floor and he would vocally and enthusiastically disagree with Senator Hatch all the time. Yet they were closest of friends. They disagreed on policy, but they didn't hate each other. Back to the letters, sorry.
We will take a break. When we come back, we will get back to letters. We have, I don't know, 300 or 400 of them, and we'll do the best we can to work our way through the pile after this short break.
The Battle of Yorktown, 1781.
Monsieur Hamilton.
Monsieur Lafayette.
In command where you belong.
Are you saying no sweat? We're finally on the field. We've had quite a run.
Immigrants, we get the job done.
So what happens if we win?
I go back to France. I bring freedom to my people if I'm given the chance.
We'll be with you when you do.
Go, lead your men.
I'll see you on the other side.
Till we meet again.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot.
Till the world turns upside down.
Till the world turns upside down.
I imagine death so much it feels more like a memory. This is where it gets me. On my feet, the enemy ahead of me. If this is the end of me, at least I have a friend with me. Weapon in my hand, a command of my men with me. Then I remember my allies is expecting me. Not only that, my allies is expecting.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Bill Hammond, Beau Breslin, Teresa Bourgeois. I'm Joe Donahue. We are talking about America 250, specifically about loving America, patriotism, freedoms, all of that stuff. We started with a poll from the Associated Press about are you proud to be an American, and then we opened up your letters, and we got a lot of them. So we're going through as many as we can get to in the time we have left, which is about 10 minutes, so we should be able to do a pretty good run here. Andrea writes, are we really the most free society in the world? You might ask women, half the population, how they feel about losing the freedom to make decisions about their own bodies. Then we go to Diane. Only here could a granddaughter of immigrants on both sides, one in restaurant business and one a cobbler, could see uncles and aunts graduate from colleges and go on to be doctors, lawyers, and architects, financiers, and myself graduate from college and go on to retire as a managing director of a brokerage firm. Thank you, America, for letting my family partake and flourish in this country. That from Diane. Then we go to Rick, who says, in 1976, my family went to the New York Harbor to see my uncle on one of the tall ships in what was a massive parade of tall ships. It was an exciting time when Jimmy Carter was elected. Now we are tired of an illegal presidency taken from us by criminality, which has subverted the entire meaning of our country. Few Americans will celebrate the 250th, but see it as a reference point, hoping that it won't be the last year we'll have anything to celebrate. That being said, I refuse to allow our 250 to be taken away from us. Then Lily checks in. Maybe freedom needs an S to make it plural. Then we can compare the U.S. specifically with other countries. Many countries have the same or more freedoms as the U.S. What do they teach us in school? A totally U.S. is best centered idea of the world. That from Linda. I'm a Democrat. I'm retired as a retired social studies teacher. In my classroom, the flag that hung was in the war in Iraq with my brother in his Black Hawk helicopter. He then presented it to my class and my students. I also have a 9x17 flag as well as a 30x50 flag that I bring around and have people hold it while I take pictures with my drone. Oh, that is so cool. I also am first generation America after my parents escaped from communist Hungary during their revolution in 1956. USA, USA, that from Steve.
Thank you for writing, Steve.
Patriotic? Question mark? It's complicated. As someone who was a history major in college in 1976, who grew up watching the Memorial Day parade pass our small town home with the flag flying from the porch, and who was paying attention when the Pentagon Papers, the revelations of the FBI and the CIA malfeasance, and Watergate pulled the veil from the facade. I heard the construction workers with the flag decals on their hard hats catcalling women passing the construction site. I graduated into the stagflation of the 70s and watched wages be suppressed, the poor be demonized, and
so much more. I also watched the civil rights movement gain much ground, the women's movement break through glass ceilings, and the LGBTQ plus community emerge from the closet so everyone could become their selfiest selves. I love my country. I fear and distrust this government, especially right now. Yeah, deep sigh. It's complicated. Yay, World Cup. That from Pamela. Then we go to John. There remains a population of Tories in Massachusetts who meet secretly and hope or wish that the British did not lose the Revolutionary War. And if the British had prevailed, then Napoleon would have sold us the Midwest. The West would still be Spanish. There would have never have been a Trail of Tears, and we would have health care. That from John.
I totally appreciate that, John.
I love these.
I love this. This is so like great. I want to comment on everyone, but I want to shut up because I want to hear more. This is so great. Thank you all for writing.
Andrea writes.
I love America. See, this is how you can love America.
And we love our listeners.
Yes,
we love our listeners.
We do.
Sorry.
We do. Andrea writes, are we really the most free society in the world? I already read that letter, and I did not take it out of the queue. I apologize.
But it's a good question to reiterate.
It is.
Because we can all work on it and make it better.
One thing I've yet to hear is the reason that there was so much joy in the bicentennial is the changing of the guard from Nixon to Gerald Ford prior to the bicentennial. I wish that could be said today. And I thought about this back when Trump was elected for the second time. We would be our president. He would be our president during the 250th, and all my nightmares have come true.
I will say one thing, though. I'm not sure that the same it would feel the same transitional from Trump to Vance as it did from Trump to from Nixon to Ford.
We go to
good
yes,
point.
Let me see. A country is what it does, writes Teresa. Did Germans love their country in 1944? I do not love my country right now. Then, Bart. This is not who we are? Then why did our country twice elect Trump? Why did 77 million Americans vote for him? Where are those real Americans who did not care enough to vote? The proof is in the pudding. What we, quote unquote, we have is definitely what we want, and that is who we are. That from Bart. Ellen says, hey, Teresa, your words brought tears to my eyes. Thank you. And there's a heart.
Oh, thank you.
JK. Jan, rather, says, maybe pride isn't what we need. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction and haughtiness before a fall. Bo isn't worried about being rounded up for anti-Trump sentiment, writes Jeffrey. Yet, Trump has shown he is going after people who have just criticized him. Mary, I am proud to be an American when I choose to honor those brave Americans who fought to expand we the people. There is a difference between ride or die nativism and patriotism. We are like a big dysfunctional family. I am not proud of every part of my family's history or some true egregious bad behaving members. However, I choose to love the joy, the kindness, the caretaking, and the strength of my country and my family. That from Mary.
Thank you so much, Mary.
We go to Richard. Sadly, the love it or leave it attitude expressed in the 60s has only gotten stronger. One of the things that I hate is having to argue with friends and family about flying the flag. Every time they see a flag, they accuse the owners of being MAGA or Trumpers. Don't let them steal your pride. Don't let them steal your patriotism. My dad passed away at 102. He and four of his brothers fought in World War II. Dad had two flags hanging every day without fail. It still flies today over the for sale sign of a home that he lived in for most of his life. Then we check in with, I want to get everyone here. We have about 2 minutes. Mark says, it is a small but important thing to me that as a lifelong Detroit Tigers fan, I must comment. Teresa earlier today commented that the Boston swept the Yankees. But in fact, it was the Detroit Tigers that swept the Yankees, finishing the sweep last night with 4 runs in the 11th inning. Best regards.
Hey,
awesome.
I was for a time a Tigers fan when I was working for a congressman from Michigan, so I appreciate the update. But the Red Sox did sweep the Yankees last weekend.
We go to Cindy says, Cindy says, am I proud to be an American? No. I'm grateful to be an American. Only people who have contributed significantly to our democracy have any right to be proud. I'm just a citizen, law-abiding, hardworking, voting, sharing my thoughts and preferences with my elected officials as seems appropriate. That's no reason for pride on my part, just gratitude for being fortunate enough to be a citizen here. That from Cindy.
Cindy, I appreciate the
20 seconds.
Yeah, so I appreciate that, but all of the things you listed is exactly what citizens should do. I'm not saying you should be proud or grateful or decide whether, but I'm just grateful for you to be that citizen.
Bill, Bo, Teresa.
We have to work to preserve our democracy.
Love you all. Thank you so much. We'll be back.